You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to a new episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast analysis of all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent for Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Thursday, August 23rd, we're officially inside a month until the beginning of training camp around the NBA, including here in Houston, expected to be somewhere around September 20th. We're even closer than that to the team's trip out to the Bahamas when the Rockets are expected to take most of the team out there in early September to begin the process of integrating James Ennis, Carmelo Anthony, and getting ready for this upcoming season, essentially a training camp before the training camp to make sure they are officially ready to go. Because certainly if you want to outplay the Warriors over 82 games, the same way they did this past year, to get a leg up in the race for home court advantage and get every variable you can chip away at the margins to give yourself a shot against the two-time defending champions, well, you need to be ready from day one. And in the Rockets' case, kudos to the leadership, James Harden, Chris Paul, Mike D'Antoni, for recognizing that doing work even in advance of training camp is important. So while these are the dog days of the NBA calendar, there's not a lot going on in the way of rumors. Most of the offseason moves have already taken place, and we're still about a month, now a little under it, from training camp officially getting going. It's not idle time for the Rockets. They are getting busy. They realize what a huge opportunity is in front of them. Now, as stated, I do think the roster is mostly set. The one they'll take to the Bahamas in a week or two will be very similar to what they bring to camp. There's one possible exception, that being Ryan Anderson. If a deal comes where you can move Ryan Anderson for more 3-and-D wing help. The Rockets lost two wing defenders this offseason, Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute. They only brought in one proven guy, that being James Ennis. Now, maybe you get lucky with D'Anthony Melton, the rookie out of USC, or Michael Carter-Williams, but Ennis the only one that is proven at this point. I think it goes without saying that if the Rockets could move Ryan Anderson, a $20 million a year player that right now isn't even in your rotation, especially with Carmelo Anthony doing many of the same things that Ryan does, just a little bit better, then certainly I think the Rockets would do it. And once you get closer to the start of training camp with some deadline pressure, again, the Rockets having incentive to get a deal done sooner rather than later to maximize their chances at getting the one seed again, like they did last year when they were 65-17, it's possible something shakes free. But more on that in later segments when we talk more speculative about the Ryan Anderson situation, also general expectations heading into camp. In our league segment, I want to address the one transaction that is almost certainly going to be resolved by the time the Rockets report to training camp, and that's the situation with D'Anthony Melton. To refresh, Melton is a rookie guard out of USC. He's drawn comparisons to guys like Pat Beverly, Avery Bradley, because of his two-way play. Solid offensive player, but potentially a very dynamic defensive guy. And the Rockets drafted him at number 46 overall this year in the second round, was seen by many as a potential lottery talent, but there was some skepticism over him because there was such limited game tape, hadn't really played basketball in over a year because his sophomore season at USC essentially went away because of an NCAA investigation into potential illegal benefits. So Melton fell to the mid-second round. It was almost unanimously viewed as the steal of the draft. And then in summer league, when he averaged nearly 20 points per game in Las Vegas and played outstanding defense at times as well, it's easy to see why the Rockets are really bullish on him playing a role, and it could be sooner rather than later. We saw in the playoffs against Minnesota and Utah, guys like Derrick Rose, Alec Burks, Dante Exum. The Rockets had a problem at times stopping dribble penetration, and that's something that D'Anthony Melton might could do from day one, because your established guards, Chris Paul, James Harden, Eric Gordon, be it age, injuries, or other factors, they're not really guys you can trust to go out on the perimeter and just deny dribble penetration, especially against the quicker types. You really haven't had a guy that could do that in Houston since Pat Beverly, and maybe that's the role that's there for D'Anthony Melton, especially when, as stated, many people have made a comparison, not just because he's in Houston, but the overall style of play between Melton and Beverly. But before we can talk about what role Melton's going to have on the floor, they have to actually sign him. They did sign the other second-round pick, Purdue forward Vince Edwards, but even in late August, we have still not had a deal between the Rockets and D'Anthony Melton. Now, they hold his rights, so I think it's ultimately going to get done, but the question is when and how. the thought has long been that the Rockets would use a portion of their mid-level exception to sign Melton, the same way they've already given a portion to Isaiah Hartenstein. There's a reason they didn't use the MLE on the open market. They're trying to get favorable deals for these young players, and when you're in tax territory for the foreseeable future, all this money guaranteed to Chris Paul, James Harden, Clint Capella through the year 2022, then you need to be able to fill out your roster with as many cheap young players as possible to keep this thing going and save your future exceptions for veterans, if at all possible. That said, while Isaiah Hartenstein, the young prospect big man the Rockets drafted in the second round a year ago, has agreed to a deal coming out of the MLE, Melton has not. And before we go too deep into it, just a quick refresher. First-round picks under the current NBA collective bargaining agreement have a slotted salary structure. If you're drafted number 22 overall, for instance, then there are parameters already in place for what your deal is going to be and whether a team is below the cap, above the cap, tax-paying or not, there's already a means for them to pay that player and give them a contract. It's set. With second-round picks, there is no set salary structure. Effectively, while teams hold their rights, you have to pay them in much the same way you could if they were a free agent. Now, the player does not have as much leverage on the open market as a free agent does because, for example, the Rockets hold Melton's rights, but they are not without leverage. So in terms of how you pay them, it's not like you can just exceed the cap to give them whatever the same way you could, you know, no matter what your salary status is, you can always give them whatever the set salary structure is for a first-round pick. For a second-round pick, you've got to give them one of your exceptions, just like they're a free agent. And the two exceptions that are generally used, those would be the mid-level exception, which for the Rockets is a tax-paying team, a little over $5 million a year. Hopefully you can get them closer to the minimum. Or the actual minimum player exception, which is the minimum salary for up to 2 years. What's the big difference between the minimum and the mid-level, especially when you consider that most of the second-round picks who get a portion of the MLE sign for close to the minimum in terms of annual value? The difference is that, again, minimum salary deals through the minimum exception can only be for a maximum of 2 years. If you use the MLE, you can get a third year of cheap labor, which is very important when, again, you're in a position like the Rockets are in, trying to build a team around a very expensive core of James Harden, CP3, and Clint Capella. In short, especially after seeing how dominant Melton appeared to be in summer league play in Vegas, there's no doubt the Rockets want to sign him using the mid-level exception and get at least 3 years of cheap labor to put him around this existing core. That said, if Melton were going to accept whatever the offer is, a deal would be done by now. Now, you can point out that, yes, once Melton signs, you cannot trade him for 30 days. And so if you're really going to get conspiratorial, you can argue that, oh, maybe there's a trade and the Rockets don't want to sign him because they could move him elsewhere. I don't buy that because, look, you can still agree to a trade and just wait until the 30-day period expires to make it official. We saw that with the Carmelo Anthony signing, that even though it wasn't signed, it was done for quite a while. In terms of rookies who are traded the summer after they sign their initial contract, we saw it most recently with Andrew Wiggins in the Kevin Love trade back when LeBron went to Cleveland in 2014. Wiggins signed his deal in July. They just waited for the 30 days to pass, and then they finalized the trade, sending him to Minnesota, bringing Kevin Love to Cleveland. So I don't think the lack of a deal between the Rockets and DeAnthony Melton is because of, oh, what if they're thinking about trading him? That doesn't really seem likely to me because they could still trade him and just wait the 30 days if a deal were there. Beyond that, I think they genuinely like him as a basketball player and are excited about his future. Instead, I think a more reasonable takeaway is that Melton wants more money than what the original offer is because it's a guy, again, who under better circumstances could have been a lottery pick. He doesn't want to sign for 3 years, delaying his first big payday, not just after year two, but to after year three, unless he's getting what he views as a reasonable deal. And that's especially the case with his agency representation, because they're all worried about setting precedent. He's financially motivated, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. The problem is that right now, he doesn't really have any leverage. He's certainly not going to not play basketball this year. And right now, the Rockets can just wait him out. Either he signs a deal under the terms that they're offering, or he has no choice but to wait around. The Rockets hold his rights, and there's not a whole lot he can do other than threaten not to play, and that's just absolutely ridiculous. There is, however, a date coming up that will change that. That date is September 5th, now under 2 weeks away. The significance of September 5th, that's the date that teams were required to provide a tender offer, basically 1 year at the minimum, to second-round picks in order to retain their rights. If they don't, the second-round picks become free agents on September 6th and can sign anywhere they choose, and obviously that's not going to happen here. The Rockets really like De'Anthony Melton, and with good reason. If the tender offer sounds familiar, it's because we have seen an increasing amount of second-round picks either use or threaten to use it as leverage in recent years, essentially betting on themselves that, hey, if I sign this one-year deal and then enter restricted free agency a year from now, I can get more money than what I'm being offered now. Most famously, it was used by KJ McDaniels in Philadelphia. And by the way, KJ ended up in Houston because he signed for a one-year deal. Philadelphia didn't think they'd be able to retain him, at least not under advantageous terms. So they dealt him to Houston, and Houston got him at a bargain rate because, of course, Philadelphia's leverage was limited because everybody knew they wouldn't be able likely to retain him that summer no matter what. And in the case of the Rockets, it's even more leverage because the Rockets, as a tax-paying team, even though Melton would technically be a restricted free agent, they would not be able to match any offers above the taxpayer MLE, which, again, is just over $5 million a year, next summer. So they could lose him outright if someone wanted to bid more than that. Even though he's restricted, they would not be able to match. But even if you say that's an extreme scenario, and it probably is, that he'd play that well enough to get that kind of offer next summer, if Melton were to sign a one-year deal, the Rockets would not have any they would not have any bird rights with him. He would be a non-bird guy, just like Luke Bamute was this summer. And the only way you'd probably be able to, outside of matching a restricted free agency offer, and I'm not sure why a team would help the Rockets out like that, you'd be stressing your own use of the mid-level exception, probably having to use a portion of that for De'Anthony Melton next summer. And if that's the case, then how do you retain your non-bird guys who are role players on your existing team, James Ennis and Carmelo Anthony, because the Rockets aren't going to have bird rights on them either. And undoubtedly, they're planning to use their mid-level exception right now, the 2019 MLE. I'm sure they have that earmarked for either Melo or James Ennis. So if you're using it for them, then where do you sign Melton from? So that's a very real threat to the Rockets, the possibility of Melton signing for the one-year tender. He can't do that now because the Rockets, until September 5th, they don't have to give him that tender to where it's in front of him for him to sign at any point. So right now, the leverage is with the Rockets, and it's not insignificant because right now, Melton does not have any guaranteed money. Every day, if he has a freak accident in a pickup basketball game or flag football, then it's mostly tough luck for him because he has not signed the deal yet. So that's, well, again, another extreme scenario. It is leverage that the Rockets have. As of September 5th, however, the leverage goes back the other way. Now, personally, I don't expect Melton to sign for the tender. I think it's a threat that he needs to squeeze a little bit more money out of the Rockets. And by the way, it's not the Rockets just being cheap. You want to save as much of the mid-level exception as you can to potentially use on buyout candidates during the year if you want to bring in another 3-and-D wing or if you want to bring in help anywhere else. You do want to save your MLE. You want to save your tax dollars so that you can potentially use those in other places. Both parties are just acting in their own self-interest. No one is acting wrong here, so to speak. But ultimately, the good news is that I don't think that Melton actually wants to sign for the tender. Besides delaying his payday, signing just a one-year deal and getting less guaranteed money, I also think he and his representation realizes that it's far from a guarantee that he can get minutes this year to build his value for next summer. For KJ McDaniels, on a woeful Philadelphia team back then, it was easy to see where if he could get minutes, he could play well to where he'd be attractive on the open market next summer, and ultimately he did end up getting a 3-year, $10 million deal from the Rockets, and that was better than what he was offered that summer when he was a second-round pick. With this Rockets team that is as good and deep as it is, it would be a considerable gamble for Melton to go into a year in which he might be ticketed for the G League to start, to then think that he would get the kind of offer next summer that would make taking a one-year deal, effectively a one-year minimum, worthwhile for him. I also think it's similar calculus to Clint Capela and the qualifying offer. If you remember during the protracted Capela negotiations, there were a lot in the national media that played up the idea of Capela getting a better contract a year from now. And Capela and his representation, of course, they were happy to play along with it because it was one of the only sources of leverage they had. However, I never viewed it as realistic a threat as a lot of others did, because while there's a lot that's been made of the summer of 2019 being better for free agents than this summer in which there wasn't that much money to go around, I think it's overdone because, as we all know, the reason there's not that much money on the open market for free agents is because of those bloated July 2016 contracts, like Ryan Anderson in Houston, but he's far from alone. Look at Timothy Mozgov, Kent Bazemore, Courtney Lee. The list goes on and on. Nearly every team has a contract or two like that. And while next summer those deals will be more movable because they're closer to expiring, they're not going to be gone. They are still going to be on someone's books, preventing them from having the cap space to offer other players. So I think it's actually going to take until the summer of 2020 for money to free up around the NBA, not next summer. So between the difficulty Melton would have in earning enough minutes to boost his value on this loaded Rockets team, and the fact that I don't think there's as much money on the market next summer as a lot of the media narratives make it seem, I don't think that Melton's endgame is to actually sign for the tender whenever the Rockets inevitably offer to him, assuming they don't have a deal before then. However, I do think that he and his team are right in believing that they can use that as leverage to get a slightly better deal before camp. And it wouldn't surprise me if the timetable is very similar to Montrezl Harrell back in 2015. Harrell was the last big-time, high-profile second-round pick that the Rockets had internally, and his deal did not get done until September 15th. And it was a pretty similar dynamic. He could have theoretically gone the KJ McDaniels route. The Rockets wanted to get him on a three-year deal because he was really liked as a high second-round pick that easily could have been a first-rounder under better circumstances. But he waited until after the Rockets had to issue that required tender, and then from there, that was his leverage back against the Rockets to eventually get a deal slightly higher than the minimum in order to sign that three-year deal. So in short, I do think the Rockets are going to sign D'Anthony Melton. Well, they're certainly going to sign him no matter what, but I think they'll get him on their terms to a mid-level exception deal, get 3 years of cheap labor like most teams are able to do with second-round picks they really like. It's just going to take some time. It's going to get a little bit hairy, and it might take into September. So there's a reason the deal hasn't been struck yet. I think Melton is very aware of his value, and he wants to get every penny, as he should. But it's a deadline-driven league, and once both sides, not just the Rockets, but Melton's representation as well, have all of the leverage at their disposal, and in the case of Melton's side, that means that September 5th deadline date for the Rockets to offer him the required tender. That, to me, and then combined with training camp opening around the 20th of September, is when there's going to be a push for both sides to get to the middle and get a deal done. I do think it happens. I don't think he signs the tender, but I think there's still a little bit more waiting to go, and ultimately, sometime before training camp, but probably not until September, is when that deal officially happens. Now, a resolution to the D'Anthony Melton saga is one thing that almost assuredly will happen in September. One thing that could happen, but is far from a given, would be a trade of Ryan Anderson. Melton's the one guy the Rockets are going to get under contract that we know could help them. But as a rookie, it's far from a given that he's going to be ready to play from day one. In terms of getting guys that are more ready to play from day one, they did bring in James Ennis. Same goes for Michael Carter-Williams. But if they want to bring in another veteran wing to replace the outgoing Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute, they're probably going to have to do it by trade. And it goes without saying the candidate to do that would be Ryan Anderson. Because right now, especially after having brought in Carmelo Anthony, who does many of the same things as Ryan Anderson, just a little bit better, then Ryan, as a $20 million player per season that is currently not even slotted into your rotation, and also a guy with that $20 million who you can match salaries with so many other teams and player combinations around the league in a deal, of course the Rockets are interested in moving him, and really, we know they've been looking at moving him for over a year now. He's certainly not a positive asset at this point, but with 2 years, $40 million left on his contract, he's certainly not the negative he was last offseason. It was 3 years, $60 million. And the closer we get to his final year when he's expiring, the more he's going to go all the way to a neutral asset, to maybe even slightly positive from the standpoint of your ability to clear cap space for another team around the league that might send Houston a longer-term salary. So for the Rockets and Daryl Morey, it's a waiting game. I think this year, they'd have to send out something. They're not going to give out multiple first-round picks. They'd probably have to give up either a future first or some sort of young prospect to make him movable now. But he might be more movable at the trade deadline when over half of the season has expired, and so maybe it's a $28 million contract over a year and a half rather than a $40 million contract over 2 years. That said, if the Rockets could get a deal done sooner rather than later, i.e. before the season, so you can bring in whoever you get into training camp, then that's all the better because it maximizes your odds of getting the number one seed based on having the best record over 82 games because you have the player there for the full slate. And also, it gives you more flexibility with what's left of your MLE, which you could also use, well, either for 3-and-D help if you need it, or if you are able to fill the 3-and-D need with the Ryan Anderson trade, then you can use what's left of your mid-level exception on buyout candidates at other positions, maybe another guard, maybe another big behind Clint Capella. Now, both to match salaries and from the standpoint of value, we know the Rockets would also have to take back an overpaid contract in order to move Ryan Anderson. So it could be, as mentioned earlier, guys that were also overpaid in July 2016. Those are strong candidates. Kent Bazemore in Atlanta. Tyler Johnson in Miami. Also James Johnson there. Courtney Lee in New York. There's lots of possibilities. One of those at the forefront of the list would be the Miami Heat, because they have not one but two guys in Tyler Johnson and James Johnson. Slightly different positions. Tyler more of a guard, James more of a forward, but both could fit, from a need standpoint, what the Rockets want more of, which is certainly wing defense. However, a bit of cold water appeared to be thrown on it earlier this week from Barry Jackson of the Miami Herald in a story on his website regarding rumors about a Heat trade involving Houston forward Ryan Anderson. That's not something that interests Miami at this time, according to a league source. Both USA Today and ESPN have floated the idea of Houston trading Anderson in a draft pick to Miami for Tyler Johnson or James Johnson. But while that would appear to interest the Rockets, it's not something the Heat has found appealing. Now, while that doesn't sound good, my initial reaction to that is, well, duh. If something did interest Miami at this time, a deal would be done, because the Rockets are very motivated to move Ryan Anderson, and they're very motivated to bring in more help from day one, if at all possible. So while it's one of those things that sounds discouraging, in reality, the use of "as this time" as a qualifier, well, it's just a little obvious that, yeah, if it were to interest Miami, I think a deal gets done. The question isn't whether a deal interests Miami at this time. The question is what changes the closer we get to the season or closer to the trade deadline in February. For example, with Miami, there are certain permutations of a trade in which it could save them luxury tax dollars. Right now, they're not really into the tax that much, but if they end up signing Dwayne Wade, as a lot of people expect them to, then that makes the tax concerns a little bit more real. But the more important factor, and this is true both with Miami scenarios or any other team, there's no real sense of urgency now in late August, because a team that's acquiring Ryan Anderson, they wouldn't be doing the trade to acquire a 30-year-old overpaid Ryan Anderson. They would be doing a trade for whatever the other benefits are, either some sort of tax savings, maybe the Rockets are giving them a future first-round pick or prospect. And right now, if you're, say, the Miami Heat or any other team, what does it matter if you acquire that 2019 first-round pick in August or in September, or hypothetically in January? The draft isn't going to happen until next June regardless, and you're not going to have the player in the fold until then. Unless you physically want Ryan Anderson, and I don't think that's the case, there's no clear sense of urgency. Now, when there could be a sense of urgency is the closer we get to training camp, and especially during the year, because at that point, there's more competition in terms of other teams potentially interested to make moves. That's the dynamic that can make trades happen in late June, early July, in that even if you're not that sold on a player you're acquiring, i.e. you're taking a salary dump, if you don't take that player, somebody else might, and then the opportunity is gone. Right now in late August, there's not much going on in the NBA, and everybody knows it. But the closer we get to camp, which is a bit of a deadline because people like to have these moves done before they report, and that's when the Rockets might be incentivized to maximize their offer, at least at this point in time, then theoretically that could bring more opportunities around the league. And then especially as we get closer to the trade deadline, that's when a team like Miami might act, because they're rightfully afraid that, hey, if we don't take advantage of this deal now and get whatever the sweetener is with Ryan Anderson, well, somebody else might take that. So to sum up, the report of Miami not being interested in Ryan Anderson at this time, it's not encouraging. It's also not discouraging, in my opinion. It's more of just an obvious matter-of-fact statement. If a team is going to take Ryan Anderson, it's going to take the market getting going to where there's some semblance of deadline pressure to get both sides to move, and that's not really going to happen, if it does, in the offseason until closer to camp. Much the same way we saw Carmelo Anthony's deal to Oklahoma City not get finalized. Different circumstances, but I think a similar principle in terms of the start of camp lending itself to higher activity around the league, more trade calls. It's that same dynamic here, in that if you want a Ryan Anderson trade before camp. It's possible. I'm not writing it off, even after the report from the Miami Herald about the Heat not having interest at this time. But I do think it underscores a theme that a lot of us have sniffed out for a long time, which is that if it does happen, be patient. It's probably not going to be until September. And now, to close out the show, more speculation. This time not about one player in particular, but more about the team as a whole and the expectations as we enter this 2018-2019 season, beginning with training camp starting less than a month from now. There was a great interview with James Harden posted this morning on the Players Tribune Twitter page, at Players Tribune, in which he goes through a few angles over his two-minute interview, but the most intriguing one to me is in which he addresses some of the national narratives, the skepticism about the Rockets, not just this season, but last season, even after the acquisition of Chris Paul, 2 years ago after the departure of Dwight Howard, the additions of Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson. It seems like every year about this time, there's a new wave of doubt surrounding the James Harden-led Rockets, and of course, ultimately, the last laugh is on the part of the Rockets fans, because we know how this thing is usually turned out, at least the past 2 years, with the Rockets wildly overachieving expectations, and this past year having the best record in the entire NBA. As far as what Harden said in his Players Tribune interview, the most notable part to me was when he was addressing the critics. Every year, they don't expect the Rockets to be where we expect ourselves to be. I'm waiting for the narrative to come out before the season starts, just to give us a little bit more motivation, fuel our fire just a little bit more. Those are the words of James Harden, and while there are some skeptical stories that have already been out there, pushed really ever since the departures of Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute, now personally, I found those to be a little silly, because even when it looked like the Rockets would retain Ariza and Bamute, then you had critics wondering if the Rockets would be too old, if they could recapture the form they had a year ago. Well, now that they're going a little bit younger for at least one of their rotation spots with James Ennis, well, now we seem to be using a different argument, which seems a little arbitrary, to say the least. But the talk is already out there, and as we get closer to training camp, it's only going to pick up more and more as these writers, these national types, start doing their season previews. And one of these articles, it's far from alone, but it's been released in the past 24 hours, so I feel compelled to address it, especially because I already did on Twitter, is from DJ Foster over at The Ringer. The Ringer, of course, is Bill Simmons' independent site. Used to have Grant Lynn when he was a part of ESPN. Now The Ringer is essentially his latest iteration of an independent site covering the NBA. And there's a story titled, "Are We Sure That Utah Isn't the West's Second Best Team?" And I would argue that I'm not sure that, at least in the regular season, that Golden State is the NBA's best team, because the Rockets outplayed Golden State by 7 games a year ago. Now, Golden State did have some unfortunate injury luck with Durant, Curry, Thompson, but it's not like the Rockets had perfect luck on their end. Look, the Rockets lost Chris Paul for 24 games, the most of any season this entire decade. They lost Ariza for 15, Bamute for over 20. Harden missed 7 in early January, missed 10 overall, the most of any season since he came to Houston. So it's not like the Rockets had that much injury luck on their end. Maybe Golden State had a little bit worse, but it wasn't night and day. And the Rockets ended up with a 7 games better record. They also had a point differential of plus 8.5 to the Warriors, which was plus 6.0. So I'm not willing to concede the one seed to the Warriors by any means. That said, if you want to say they're the best because they're the two-time defending champions, I understand that and I respect it. And we can look through the rest of the Western Conference and say, outside of Golden State, who's the best team? Personally, I think it's clearly Houston. There is a 16-game gap between Houston and the rest of the Western Conference. That is enormous. And if you want to make a case for a team like Utah, who, by the way, lost to the Rockets in 5 games in the second round of the playoffs, then you would have to overcome a 17-game gap between those two teams this past season, which is absolutely massive. Yes, Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute are good basketball players. Are they that good, especially when you factor in bringing in guys like James Ennis, Carmelo Anthony, De'Anthony Melton, et cetera, to potentially fill those roles? And, of course, there's still the potential Ryan Anderson trade just discussed, buyout candidates. That's an awful lot to ask. That said, the status quo doesn't sell stories. It's sexy to play up new narratives, potential changes entering the coming season. So that's why I think these other alternatives, as far as teams besides the Rockets that can potentially challenge Golden State, are going to get played up in the weeks ahead. And while it may get clicks for those sites, at the same time, many of these writers essentially bend the truth for the sake of the narrative. I think that's what Harden is pointing to. And in this case, I'm going to pick on the Ringer article because it's the newest, but it's far from the only one echoing these similar themes, these talking points. So I want to address this one so that hopefully Rockets fans know how to frame future articles that undoubtedly will try and use some of the same logic. Now, in this Ringer article, it starts off by making the comparison between Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute and Carmelo Anthony and James Ennis. The quote, Utah should match up better than the Rockets after the latter swapped two low-maintenance willing defenders in Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute for the polar opposite of that in Carmelo Anthony and James Ennis, who has played for four teams in four seasons. Now, I'm not going to get too much into the Carmelo aspect of it because, as I've said before, I think Carmelo Anthony is more of a replacement for Ryan Anderson than he is either Ariza or Bamute. I think James Ennis is the replacement for one of those two, and then the other one will come either through a trade of Ryan Anderson or a potential buyout signing during the year. But to start with, to deride James Ennis while simultaneously praising Luke Bamute, the quote that's anti-Ennis is that he's played for four teams in 4 years, that's absolutely ridiculous, because going into last season, Luke Bamute had played for four teams in his last four seasons, and five teams in his last five. Last summer, Luke Bamute signed for a minimum contract, just like James Ennis did. So just as Luke Bamute proved that you can find diamonds in the rough, guys can slip through the cracks, especially with that skill set to sign for the minimum. If it could happen with Luke, why couldn't the same thing happen with Ennis? They have very similar profiles. If anything, because Ennis is 28 and Luke was 31, you might have more upside on the part of Ennis than you did this time a year ago with Luke Bamute. So you can see that even for a so-called journeyman, which is the picture that the Ringer article is trying to paint, a journeyman signing for the minimum, what can he really bring you? Well, it brought a lot with Luke, and it could bring a lot with James Ennis. You can still find significant value that way. Why? First, I think defense is still undervalued in today's NBA. Even with all the analytics out there, players still get paid in large part due to traditional stats, and with defense that points to rebounds, blocks, steals, etc. Tough, traditional man-to-man defense can often get undervalued because there's not really a direct metric for that. Secondly, and more importantly, players like Ennis and Bamute often have more value in certain situations. A Luke Bamute or James Ennis might not have too much value if you plop them in with, say, the Sacramento Kings. Because in a situation like that, their offensive deficiencies are glaring, and even though there's quality defense, it's not going to outweigh the fact that the team just doesn't score enough. And many times, they might even become less effective and efficient offensively because they have to feel like they have to try to create, which isn't really their strength. It's not what they're good at. However, put them on a loaded roster with guys like James Harden, Chris Paul, and now Carmelo Anthony doing the heavy lifting on offense, that allows an Ennis or a Bamute to specialize in what they're good at, and then from there, the team can maximize their ability. And that, to me, gets to the crux of the issue. It's not just the Ringer piece. This is just the latest one. In my opinion, the entire framing of Houston's offseason by many of these national media is overlooking the culture and the team factors that made guys like Luke Bamute or even Trevor Ariza so valuable in the first place. Yes, those are good players that Houston lost. However, part of the reason they were so good, you have James Harden and Chris Paul, you've got steady culture and leadership under Mike D'Antoni, and we've seen it throughout NBA history. Role players can be somewhat interchangeable if the stars and the culture are in place, and that goes back to Harden, CP3, and Mike D'Antoni. So yes, Ariza and Bamute were good players, but while they made Houston better, Houston also made them better. So who's to say the same can't be true with a James Ennis, or even a Michael Carter Williams, a rookie D'Anthony Melton, etc., etc.? These other types of players with similar defensive ability, why aren't we considering whether putting them in a situation on a loaded 65-win juggernaut like the Rockets could boost their value? That, to me, is the real issue. People are still underrating and underestimating just how dominant the Rockets were and are. And why is that? To me, it's because everything these days is framed around expectation. Since the Rockets weren't supposed to be a 65-win juggernaut last year, in my opinion, a lot of national media members are acting like it was just this incredibly fragile result that was only due to perfect chemistry, some magic combination in which the sum was greater than the parts. Instead, what I would counter with is this. What if the original expectations were just wrong? What if the Big Three foundation of Chris Paul, James Harden, and Clint Capella with Mike D'Antoni as the coach really is that good. Keep in mind, in the regular season when those big three played, the winning percentage was over 900. It was insane. To me, a lot of this is national media members that rather than admit that this time a year ago they were wrong, it's doubling down on an initial flawed take that, no, the Rockets can't be this good. The foundation can't be that dominant. It had to be something perfect that came together. And now, if you pull Ariza and Luke Bamute out, then the whole thing is going to crumble. In my opinion, it's going back to initial expectations, defaulting on those, rather than actually being open-minded to looking at the data. One final point before we close out, and this is particular to Luke Bamute. This Ringer article, and many like it, frames the discussion, or most of it, on matching up with the Warriors. The popular narrative out there, we've all seen it, is that Houston's extreme switchability on defense, all these versatile defenders, is what gave them a chance. Now, first off, as I've said before, I'm not sure I agree with that conceptually. There's more than one way to win basketball games. Whether you win 125-120 or 85-80, it's about scoring more points than the other team. There's not only one way to do this. That gets back into what we were just discussing, that I think folks have underrated the Rockets' core all along, and in my opinion, they're still doing it. But to talk more specifically, this Ringer article, and I've seen others do it as well, is framed around the concept of matching up with Golden State, and then it cites the impact of losing two long, versatile defenders in Ariza and Bamute, and then whether the Rockets can recapture the form that had them so close in the Western Conference Finals before losing in seven games, most likely due to Chris Paul's ill-timed hamstring injury. The problem with that framing, and I think most of you know it, Luke Bamute barely played in the Western Conference Finals. He fell out of the rotation altogether, either based on his injured shoulder or confidence issues that arose from that. Either way, he didn't even play a single minute in Houston's wins in Game 4 and Game 5, in which Houston had tremendous defensive performances. Luke did not play a single minute in those games, and he also didn't play in Game 7, even when Joe Johnson and Ryan Anderson got some extended run, and the Rockets were in a position to potentially win it, led by as much as 15 and were within 6 points, even with under 4 minutes to go. Now, this isn't meant to bash Luke by any means. He was a very important part of the Rockets winning 65 games over the 82-game regular season slate, and that helped the Rockets get the number one seed, which was really important in terms of having a chance to almost take down Golden State. They'll certainly need to replace those contributions if they want to go after the one seed again, which Daryl Morey has said is an important variable, and it looks like that's certainly the plan. But if you're doing matchup talk, which this and a lot of other stories have been, and wondering whether the Rockets can recapture that form from the 2018 Western Conference Finals, the Rockets aren't replacing two rotation players with James Ennis and Carmelo Anthony. They're replacing one. That's an enormous difference, and that's before we even mention guys like Melton, Michael Carter-Williams, the potential trade of Ryan Anderson for wing help, the potential addition of a midseason buyout candidate because the Rockets have most of their MLE, etc., etc. I know narratives can be a powerful thing in media, but again, I would urge you to remember that this time a year ago, there was a ton of talk about the Rockets not being deep enough after all the depth they lost in the Chris Paul trade. Houston overcame that then, and I fully expect them to also overcome this perception now. So with that, I will wrap up. As always, thanks to you guys, our loyal listeners, for tuning in. If you want more content before our next wave of shows next week, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I am on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Lockdown Rockets. We've also got an email address, lockdownrockets@gmail.com, a Facebook account at facebook.com/lockdownrockets, a website at lockdownrockets.com. Always, you can access our content, ask me questions about the team, suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, anything we do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan, or you, the human being. Don't hesitate to reach out. Also, if you haven't subscribed to us already, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, TuneIn, etc., wherever you listen to your podcast, there's a good chance that we're on there because we're part of a great network of shows across the Lockdown Podcast Network covering the NBA, the NFL, even some Major League Baseball and college sports starting this week. So you should be able to find us pretty easily. Subscribe to us. That's how you'll get episodes right when they come out. And if you'd also be kind enough to leave a 5-star review, that's how we can make the business model work and look attractive to potential advertisers and keep this thing going as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Also, while I'm not going to have another show until next week, barring an unexpected signing tomorrow or this weekend, that's not going to be the case for Lockdown Texans, our sister show across town hosted by Robert Lind and Brian Patterson. The Texans have their third and most important preseason game this weekend against the LA Rams. So if you want insight on that, how the Texans do, both leading into the game and recapping it, I strongly encourage you to check out Lockdown Texans, perhaps subscribe to them as well at the same places you can subscribe to Lockdown Rockets for regular insight. with those plugs out of the way, I think this will wrap it for today. Again, thanks for tuning in, and please come back next week when we'll be talking more Houston Rockets basketball right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast analysis of all things Houston Rockets.